Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 19th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start off our look at what's happening around the nation and the world today with a duh update, because some of this shouldn't surprise us at all, but it's also a wars and rumors of war update for pretty much the very same reason. From Natural News, the death list continues to grow. You've heard the new smokescreen term, sudden adult death syndrome. And maybe it's no surprise, that the number of unexplained deaths and sudden deaths continues to inexorably grow. It's gotten so bad that in the beaches in Italy alone, at least 11 vacationers under the age of 60 have suddenly and unexpectedly dropped dead in just the last 24 hours. The youngest victim under the age of 60 was 22, another was a 52-year-old doctor, and that number doesn't count those above the age of 60, from 75 to 85 and so forth, that have also suddenly and unexpectedly dropped dead. No surprise, Italian officials, police, and medical workers should be but are not demanding investigations into the deaths. Hey, why investigate something if you already pretty well know what it is, but you're not about to admit it? So that's kind of a war against the people of the world. The other obvious war is the World War III front, where multiple stories, including this first one from Hal Turner's radio show, are saying that the American embassy in Kiev, Ukraine, has now increased its alert status and is publicly advising all Americans to get out of Dodge immediately, as embassy functions will again be transferred to Lviv in western Ukraine. They did it back in early February, then later moved them back. Now they're doing it again. And all of this, they report, seems to coincide with intelligence saying that Ukraine plans to use the new Biden regime-provided HIMARS multiple launch rocket systems to attack, this time, Crimea, which is now Russian territory. And Russia has previously warned that if U.S. long-range weapons are used against, quote, Russian territory, then they will declare the U.S. to be an active combatant engaged in an act of war and will take military action. Meanwhile, the idiots claiming to be the American government say that Crimea is Ukrainian territory, and so Ukrainians can use American-provided HIMARS against it. Over the weekend, the former president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, publicly spoke out about possible Ukrainian attacks on Crimea, saying, quote, if something like this happens, Judgment Day will happen to all of them. And overnight, say the stories, the Russian Navy began moving a number of ships out of Crimea back to port. Meanwhile, the Russian Black Sea Fleet pulled anchor and left Sevastopol for the Kuban. Clearly, they all suspect a possible missile attack on port facilities. And no surprise, that would be yet another act of open war. Meanwhile, Russian energy giant Gazprom has declared force majeure on gas supplies to at least one major EU customer, and it's retroactive to the month of June. They're not going to supply any gas via Nord Stream 1 until further notice, and of course that means German energy supplies, already in a world of hurt, are only going to get worse. And given that the flow of Russian natural gas has already been stoppered, Germany and other European nations have begun drawing down on stored natural gas reserves in their own countries as of January the 11th, which are, of course, finite reserves and will eventually run out. Various countries in Europe have varying amounts of gas in storage, but none of them have more than a few months' worth. Ultimately, when the gas runs out, there won't be any power for steam boilers, and, of course, that means no steam, which won't turn the turbines, and that means no electricity. A related confirmation story from the burning platform says that the tactical pause taken by the Russian military a little over a week ago is now coming to an end, according to the American Institute for the Study of War. And here, they were not mistaken, because the head of the Russian Defense Ministry, Sergei Shoigu, has ordered a step up in efforts in all sectors of the front, claiming that the key task is to prevent the armed forces of Ukraine and Ukrainian neo-Nazis from continuing to launch rockets and conduct massive attacks on residential areas and the, quote, peaceful infrastructure of the People's Republics of Donbass and other regions. And that raises another question about the use of American multiple launch rocket systems, or HIMARS, and who manages them. The Ukrainian military is only engaged in the protection of the HIMARS system, but the claim is, as announced by the Russian Foreign Ministry, it's U.S. and British military personnel that are managing the systems. Claims Sergei Lipovoy, chairman of the presidium of the public organization called Officers of Russia, in an interview with Sargrad, It's no secret that HIMARS have increased range and increased accuracy, and that American assurances HIMAR will be used only for military purposes and not for civilian objects do not stand up to any scrutiny. We can see that, in fact, these MLRSs are used specifically for the civilian population and civilian objects. That is, he continues, America is killing civilians and doing everything to ensure that there's as much destruction as possible. And the deaths ought to be on the heads of American politicians. First of all, he said, the American marionette-in-chief, Joe Biden. Military expert Alexei Leonkov has commented on related information about the presence of foreigners in Ukraine at the HIMARS consoles, and according to him, there are indeed American officers in Ukraine managing MLRS. There's also evidence that a certain number of U.S. military personnel are engaged in escorting M777 howitzers and counter-battery stations to their intended duty stations. And to wrap up our wars and rumors of war segment for today, courtesy of the Saker, we have this piece published in Izvestia newspaper from Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, which, as translated, says, today the Russian armed forces, together with the self-defense units of the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, are delivering on the objectives of the special military operation with great resolve to put an end to the outrageous discrimination and genocide of the Russian people and eliminate direct threats to the security of the Russian Federation that the United States and its satellites have been creating on Ukrainian territory for years. While losing on the battlefield, says Lavrov, the Ukrainian regime and its Western patrons have descended to staging bloody incidents, aka false flags, to demonize our country in the eyes of the international community. He names a bunch of them and says that the Russian Defense Ministry has been regularly issuing warnings with facts in hand, he notes, about upcoming staged incidents and fakes. Whereupon he proceeds to describe a number of them, going back quite a while, at some length, including but not limited to Pentagon covert activities in Ukraine carried out through the Defense Threat Reduction Agency and in direct violation of chemical and biological weapons treaties like the Convention on the Prohibition of Biological and Toxin Weapons, BTWC, noting they presented the documents to Washington and the UN Security Council, all the while the U.S. tries to claim that the biological research in Ukraine was exclusively peaceful and civilian in nature, notwithstanding the total lack of any evidence to that effect. Oh yeah, and he left this part out. The biological weapon being injected into billions of people worldwide is safe and effective, too. You believe that? All of which, he suggests, prompts a question. What will be the outcome of all these storylines? Stage incidents based on blood and agony are by no means fun, but a display of cynical policy in creating a new reality where all principles of the UN Charter and all norms of international law are attempted to be replaced with their rules-based order in an aspiration to perpetuate their dwindling domination in global affairs. And he goes on to suggest that the collective West should come back to Earth from their world of illusions, because these staged incidents, no matter how long they go on, will not work. And here's the thing that kind of leaps off the page as far as your host is concerned. I can't help but think that what he's describing on the international scene is exactly what we're seeing in the way of false flags a lot closer to home. They're not working either, but don't expect the regime to back off from continuing them. Here's another one, different aspect, but ultimately the same major story. As part of the West suffers from a historic drought, says Tyler Durden in Zero Hedge, all eyes have shifted to the People's Republic of California, where farmers of hundreds of thousands of acres now gone fallow in a state responsible for a tremendous amount of U.S. food production are demonstrating just how far gone things are. Unprecedented cuts to water supplies are jeopardizing the future of growing for many farmers, it says. Drought conditions continue to worsen, making it harder for farmers to irrigate crops, and of course the fact they're being cut off from water supplies doesn't help. As fields dry up and farm production drops, literally through the floor, Josue Medellin Azuara, associate professor at the University of California at Merced, told Bloomberg that 800,000 acres of California farmland could be unworked this year, more than double the incredible number of acres that were left unworked last year. And just like that, multi-year, multi-decade investments in farm production have been wiped out over much of the West by new water restrictions. Much of this fallow land, it says, is in California's Central Valley, which produces, or well, at least once produced, more than half of all the fruits, vegetables, and nuts grown in the United States. Wait a second. I guess there's a certain irony in this, folks, because California, once widely known as the land of fruits and nuts, has even stuck a fork in that. Remember, California once produced a quarter of United States food supply, and shrinking crop output is more alarming now that news of food inflation is already scaring the living you-know-what out of people who are aware of what's going on. And all of this means it's not only not going to abate anytime soon, expect it to get worse. There is, of course, a related war going on against the rule of law. This comes via the Epoch Times, and it says that members of the production team for a far-left talk show called The Late Show with Stephen Colbert have been cleared of charges by federal prosecutors, sick, on Monday after they were arrested last month in a building on the U.S. Capitol complex for, does this sound familiar? Unlawful entry. But guess what? If you're far enough left, you can do that and get away with it. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Swamp said in a statement that they've decided to drop misdemeanor charges against those nine staffers. Well, look at that, folks. They didn't even have to cool their jets in a gulag for a year. And they don't even have to appear for their scheduled hearing on July 20th. Isn't that special? Commenting on the obvious double standard here, and that's putting it mildly, President Donald Trump blasted the decision, saying Colbert staffers were, quote, treated so differently than the unselects, he capitalized, are treating so many of our great American patriots. He called it not fair. And it's not the least bit surprising, either. But wait, there's more. One of George Soros' evidently bought and paid for minions, L.A. District Attorney Sick George Gascon, is now dissolving an office that was once responsible for notifying victims of their rampant crime and their families when their assailant has parole hearings. I guess part of the problem is they don't do that anymore. They just let the really, really evil ones go. So what's the point of notifying anybody, especially if you want them to be caught off guard by what happens next? Made up of victims' advocates, the parole unit, also called the lifer unit, will be disbanded by the end of this year. Attorney Kathleen Cady, one of several former prosecutors providing pro bono assistance to crime victims in response to the policies of the Soros scumbag, said in an email statement that the latest move by this particularly evil individual is, quote, indefensible. The systematic and pervasive violation of victims' rights appears to be motivated by one goal, said Cady, to release as many murderers, child molesters, and rapists as possible from prison. Keeping victims informed and protecting the people of California and victims' rights just seems to get in the way, unquote. And I guess that's hard to argue with, even if it's still not at all surprising. Speaking of which, neither is this from the January 6th circus. House GOP conference chairwoman, Representative Elise Stefanik of New York, has called out scumbags like Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, chair of the January 6th House Committee on Un-American Affairs, questioning why House Speaker, nutcase Nancy Pelosi, number three in line for dictatorship, is still off limits from any so-called scrutiny by the committee. That's a laugher, isn't it? Over events that led up to the violence, or at least what was sold as violence, on January 6, 2021. She told Fox News, Life, Liberty, and Levine, quote, you have only one office that's off limits to investigation, and that office is Nancy Pelosi's. Benny Thompson said at the start of this witch hunt that everything is fair game, she added. Well, except for the Speaker of the House's office. What he really meant, folks, is that they intend to go after the president and anybody that might actually think the election was stolen. And, of course, as Stefanik reported, and you already knew this, we know that, quote, the Speaker's office was made aware of potential threats, potential violence that day. They failed to do their job to ensure the Capitol Police had the support they needed to secure the Capitol, said Stefanik, and they have not turned over the communication with the Sergeant-at-Arms office. No surprise there, is it? The American people, said Stefanik, deserve to have that information. That, of course, doesn't mean they're going to get it. And she added that the January 6th committee, say it with me, folks, is a waste of taxpayer dollars. Oh, it's far worse than that. It's a war against the American people and everything that was once called their God-given, constitutionally protected rights. Here's another one that arguably shouldn't surprise us, but at least it's good news. This comes from Gallup, and it says Americans' confidence in two facets of the waystream news media, that's your host terminology, of course, newspapers and TV news, have both fallen to all-time low points. Just 16% of American adults are now dumbed down to the point where they have either, quote, a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in newspapers, while only 11% are duped by television news. Both readings are down a full 5 percentage points from just last year alone. And it says Gallup has tracked Americans' confidence in newspapers since 1973 and television news since 1993 as part of their annual polling about major U.S. institutions. And basically what this shows is, yep, they're going down the toilet. And would you believe that while Republicans and independents basically don't believe a word they're hearing from those once-valued institutions, about a third of Democrats are still drinking the Kool-Aid, even though their numbers, too, are far lower than in the past. And this is almost funny in hindsight. Although trust in the media in the U.S. has been scarce for many years, confidence ratings in newspapers and TV news have never been as low as they are now. So taken together, all of these data suggest that the media has a long way to go to win back the public confidence. Either that or a whole lot of people that know better have just plain got to die off. And maybe that's the real plan. All right. Well, after all of that, I guess this is almost good news. Interesting piece, at least, courtesy of James Howard Kunstler, his website, and places like LouRockwell.com, and it's kind of optimistically entitled, The Last Days of, and he always puts it in quotes, Joe Biden, or at least whoever his body double is today. Whose idea, he begins, was it to send the wind-up doll fake president called Joe Biden to Saudi Arabia? It's like our country's trapped on one of those swirling carnival rides, beloved at county fairs. Only, the felonious mutt who runs the ride has nodded off in a fentanyl delirium, and left the motor running at maximum speed, while children of all ages locked in the pods of this infernal machine shriek and vomit with each new sickening rotation, while the half-century-old swing arms groan and wobble from metal fatigue on their squealing pivots. And suddenly comes the deafening crunch of smashed gears, the smell of burning oil, and the pathetic whimpering of the nearly dead. That, he says, is us, America, 2022. Some terrible midsummer accident of state has befallen the USA Carnival, and most people are just plain too dazed to know it. Whose idea, again, was it to send the wind-up doll masquerading as president, called Joe Biden, to Saudi Arabia? He goes on to say, I can just imagine what went on in the chamber in private with JB and MBS, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, virtual autocrat of the oil-soaked desert land. The American visitor muttered something about wanting an ice cream cone before dropping into that infamous catatonic thousand-yard stare. How does this thing work? MBS asked the chief vizier, foreign minister in Arabic, of course, gesticulating disdainfully at that ghostly figure sunk in the plush camel hair armchair just yards away, while Joe Biden sits motionless because someone has forgotten to rewind him. And that would be the aide who carries the faux president's Adderall. Well, we'll make up some camel dung, says the foreign minister, for at least to CNN and friends, because they'll fall for anything. After which, Kunstler turns to some interesting and evidently hopeful speculation, saying, I think we've witnessed Joe Biden's final appearance at any world stage event, because he can now do no more for the party of chaos, which has already done what it can to wreck the joint with him as pretend head of state. The Ukraine gambit is a bust, a foolish miscalculation. I don't think it was a miscalculation at all, folks. I think the intent was and still is to poke the bear and foment World War III, while tearing down the world economy in the process. But anyway, it was wrong, right from the get-go. All it accomplished, says Kunstler, was to reveal the pitiful dependence of our European allies on Russian oil and gas, leaving their economies good and truly scuppered without it. Meanwhile, the Russians end up with control of the Black Sea, probably the Ukraine breadbasket as well, and now Europe will starve and freeze. Do they really want to commit suicide like that? Do the populations of Germany, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Spain, and the rest of them just aim to roll into oblivion? Probably not. Now, here your host has to say, of course, it doesn't matter, so far as the EU is concerned, what the populations want. Rather, says Kunstler, we're entering the season of upended governments. And here comes the hopeful note. The Schwaben-Clausian stooges implanted everywhere will be overthrown, he suggests. NATO and the European Union will dissolve into ignominious impotence, and the various countries involved will have to renegotiate their destinies, foregoing U.S. advice and coercion. And they might even become adversaries of the USA, not allies. After all, do you forget we once fought two world wars against Germany not all that long ago? And a lot of these countries have been fighting with one another since the Bronze Age, too. History, of course, never stops reminding us just what a prankster it is. A strange and terrible inversion has occurred in this fourth turning. Somehow Mr. Putin's Russia is left to represent what remains of international rule of law, while the Western so-called democracies sink deeper into a morass of deranged despotism. Anyway, they're all too busy conducting war against their own citizenry to even pretend to assist their Ukrainian proxies, while Joe Biden crammed nearly 60 billion fiat bucks into the Ukraine money laundering machine since February, which will now just spew hallucinated capital back into increasingly disordered world financial markets. Of a world jonesing for more fiat bucks, and probably going to find itself in the dollar DTs. And look, he says, indices are up worldwide this morning. Why? Because global business is so good? I don't think so. And moving towards autumn, what we have to look forward to is the blatant desperation of the clique, the clack, how about Communist Chinese Party, behind Joe Biden. Their propaganda machine is going all out on things like climate change and renewed booga, booga, booga COVID hysteria. There are heat waves, too, in midsummer. Can you imagine such a thing? CNN acts like it's shocked. Shocked, I tell you, that it's over 100 degrees in Texas. Really? Never seen that before? Meanwhile, behind the news about emerging Omicron, can I say it again? Booga, booga, booga subvariant, the vaccine injuries and deaths, you know what they're calling it, SADS. Mount, while the CDC, the Center for Death and Control, pretends not to notice. They're just lying as usual, and Americans are supposed to pretend they don't know it, even though we expect it. You've forgotten that it wasn't always so, he says, and soon it will really matter. I guess all I can add to that is it already really matters. It's just that soon there'll be a lot more of them figuring it out. And on that score, I'll wrap up with a couple of really cogent remarks from a woman who's becoming one of my new favorite leftists. Okay, well, maybe former leftists. This is Naomi Wolf's Substack. It's a piece entitled Facing the Beast, and she begins by telling the story of a bear that came up to her house while she was sitting on her porch one day, who then trapped her in her house. She went and tried to get a gun, ended up finding, the wrong one. She grabbed a BB gun instead, and then describes in detail the next hour or so of terror until finally some neighbors showed up and rescued her. The problem is the bear had become habituated, gotten used to being able to have its run of the property, and the result was terrifying. At certain points of extreme stress, she said, I couldn't even bring myself to look outside anymore to see where that bear was. Could I not see him because he was already in the house? I went to that place that's so familiar to those of us with PTSD, a traumatized place where you freeze and you engage in magical thinking. Then she goes on to describe her rescue. I think I was coherent, but I was in shock. For days, though, I ruminated about the sharp yellow teeth of that bear exposed as he raised his snout in the air, sniffing like a scene from a horrifying fairy tale. Why do I tell this story, says Naomi Wolf? Because the bear had been growing more and more comfortable emerging from the woods. He grew more and more comfortable exploring our trash. Then he took over territory exploring our lawn. Yes, he was habituated. And here the lesson is, I had done nothing to stop him. He was here because I let him slowly take over our property and even our home. The fact that I wasn't able to look directly at the bear didn't make me any safer. It was my denial that put me in ever greater danger. And that, of course, not only did it really happen, but it's also a great metaphor. She then goes on to describe, guess what? The vaccines and Pfizer. And she outlines in grisly detail some of the financial connections, as well as the lethality and the damage caused by the poison poke injection, as well as the original BioNTech Fosun, and that's the CCP-run Chinese company that really is pulling the strings, and their MOU. It seems to imply that all of the BioNTech Fosun joint ventures activity is in China, or in regions aligned with or close to China, but Fosun Pharma didn't stay in China. It came here. It's now Fosun Pharmaceuticals USA with branches for R&D and product formulation in Boston and Princeton. But here's the crucial information, she writes. Fosun Pharmaceuticals doesn't just partner with Pfizer BioNTech to make the COVID-1984 not vaccines. They also make, as we've noted, the PCR tests that are the single primary metric used to determine the scale of the pandemic in North America and Western Europe, and thus the lockdowns of entire countries, whole industrial sectors. It's a CCP-run campaign, says Naomi Wolf, and CCP-created product. and they decide who can go to work or school, who must close his or her shop or business, who can and can't travel in all of Europe and in the U.S. A CCP-run company decides the formulation of the PCR and antigen tests that go deep into the nasopharyngeal cavities of Westerners who are forced week after week to test and test and retest with these, I'll put it in here, self-serving abomination of products. So you take all the above and consider the virus originated in China, now all of the testing apparatus, as well as millions of the so-called vaccines, the catastrophically damaging lethal solutions to the virus that really aren't, they also all originate from the very same folks, including, of course, the Fauci Meister here, too. Mapping these points of evidence, I think you'll start to see, she says, what I see. Well, hopefully by now, folks, it's getting kind of hard not to. We are, in fact, staring into the abyss right now, she concludes, because we have let the beast come too close to home. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.